Today's show is brought to you by Underbrush, a new thriller by Kevin Carr. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to a very spooky episode of Fat Guys at the Movies. I can do that accent because I'm Hungarian. That's not a racist thing to do. I'm a Hungarian man. Anyways, on today's show, on the big fat Halloween special, I'm going to be talking about Inferno, Gimme Danger, Certain Women, and the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Let's Do the Time Warp Again. Now, I know that just came out last week on TV, but I have a few things I want to say about it. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and, of course, the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, if it's still here, you can go to twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Let's talk about some non-Halloween news. First of all, this dropped right before the show dropped last week, so I really didn't get to talk about it, but Donald Glover from Community is what he's best known for. He's been tapped to play a young Lando Calrissian in the Han Solo prequel movie, which is kind of cool, actually. I can get into Donald Glover doing anything because I think Donald Glover's a good actor and this gives him a good opportunity. And it's something different that you wouldn't necessarily expect. I know he was campaigning to be Spider-Man and that didn't happen, but I think he could pull off Lando Calrissian. I really do, because that's the kind of good-looking charmer, not always taken seriously type of character that Billy Dee Williams brought in the 80s. So I'm looking forward to that. I think that's a good choice. The next piece of development news, which also falls into the geek territory, is Deadpool 2. There's been some things rocking the boat there. And as great as that movie was, you always got to worry about a hugely successful, especially a movie they didn't expect to be as successful as Deadpool was, making the next movie, which is tough. It's been subtitled at this point, Love Machine. I think that's a Blue Harvest kind of title. I don't think that's going to stick, but that's what it's going under. It's lost its director, Tim Miller, who directed the first one, and arguably made the Deadpool movie work just as much as Ryan Reynolds did. He quit over supposedly creative differences with Ryan Reynolds. Now, that's a rumor. It all stemmed from the fact that the studio and Reynolds wanted a very similar type of movie, where they wanted it smaller budget. They wanted it to be that snarky, edgy comedy, and they didn't want to suddenly say, well, made so much money, let's throw some more cash at it and make it more like a regular superhero movie. And I think that would be a mistake to do. You got to keep Deadpool what Deadpool was. And it would be silly and stupid of anybody to say, well, because the first one did so well, now let's throw a bunch of money and change the process. This is what kind of made it work, is it was this low budget fluke. And I think you can repeat that if you kind of just make a similar type of movie. Now, there are some reports saying that that's not true and that Tim Miller didn't necessarily want a big-budget superhero movie, but you're never going to know. But anyways, he's not doing it anymore. Now, of course, Ryan Reynolds brought a lot of not just acting to it, but he was a fan of the character and he wanted to bring it to life better than it was in the Wolverine Origins movie, where the Merc with the Mouth quite literally got his mouth sewn shut. Anyways, I'm still keeping my fingers crossed for Deadpool 2. Now, the last thing I want to talk about is The Walking Dead season opener. I do not watch the show. I broke up with that show back in the second season. I must have been two episodes in, maybe, to the second season. And I was like, I was so bored. I mean, I know I have a lot of friends in the horror realm. And I know it's Halloween weekend. And so everybody's looking forward to horror movie themed stuff. I have not been a big fan of horror television recently. I mean, I like some old ones. I like Kolchak, the old Kolchak episode. I like Twilight Zone. I even like, you know, stuff like Adam's Family, which is a little more goofy and irreverent. But right now there's a whole bunch of horror themed stuff, like, you know, not just Walking Dead. You've got American Horror Story. You've got Scream Queens. It's kind of a kitschy thing. I've not watched much of that. I watched The Walking Dead, and I didn't like American Horror Story. But I've never been a big fan of The Walking Dead simply because it's just a bunch of dirty people sitting around talking and being mean to each other. And that's apparently what happened. Now, here's the thing. I'm not going to give any spoilers, but it was pretty violent and punishing, the season opener. And I personally don't get the fascination with punishing the viewer, making the viewer just hate what's happening to their characters. I've never liked that. That's why I don't get into Game of Thrones, and I have no desire to watch it, because it's like, oh, who's going to die on this episode? I've never been a big fan of just watching shows or movies that want you to be uncomfortable and dislike what you see. I like to have fun. I like to be entertained. But what blew my mind is how many people got so up in arms about it. Both sides, people are like, I can't watch that show, it's disgusting. And then people are like, oh, they went up overboard and they went too far. And then there's also people, I loved it. It was just so painful to watch. I don't get that. But it's The Walking Dead. Would you expect anything else? It's a horror show. It's based on violence and misery. It's misery porn. It's these people in this horrible apocalypse trying to survive. And you just want everyone to shower. But there's a trend in horror, and it's been around for a long, long time, for things to be the most shocking and visceral. And we've seen that, especially recently. There's been a big resurgence over the last 10, 15 years, you know, with Irreversible, which arguably isn't a horror movie. But you got a lot of foreign films, especially stuff that came out of Japan and France in the early 2000s, stuff like Martyrs and Inside. And then in Japan, you got stuff like Takashi Miike's work, and you've got some very extreme weird stuff coming out of Japan, but sometimes very almost nihilistic and painful to watch. And then it sort of spilled into America in the mid-2000s with Hostel and Saw and the torture porn. And then things really ramped up with Human Centipede saying, oh, let's do the most offensive thing possible. And then a Serbian film came out and just kind of shut the lid on that one, because how do you top a Serbian film? I'm not even going to talk about what's in that movie. I was never a big fan of the one-upmanship on that. Now we've got new ones coming out. There's one I went to a horror marathon and didn't see this because there was a problem with the print. But there's this movie called We Are the Flesh, which apparently is the most disturbing thing ever. And there was a movie called that they showed that I left before because I was bored with the rest of the lineup. There's one they showed later at night called Night of Something Strange that is so completely twisted and violent and vomit-inducing. I'm not into that. And yes, you know, Frankenstein was shocking back in 1931, and Cabinet of Dr. Caligari had people protesting it back in, what, the 20s when that came out. And horror has always pushed the boundaries. But I like a little more fun with it. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. First one I want to talk about is Split, which opens on January 20th. It's directed by everyone's favorite twisty director, M. Night Shyamalan.
I've never seen a case like this before. 23 identities live in Kevin's body. Did something happen?
Open the door!
The human brain is the most complex object in the universe.
The only way we're getting out of here is if one of them decides to let us out.
Aren't you the clever one?
Now, this one stars James McAvoy as a guy with multiple personalities. Actually looks kind of good. I like the fact that Shyamalan left behind the big budget filmmaking, stuff like After Earth, which was just awful, and has moved back to what he does best, which are these sort of Twilight Zone or intimate stories. But this one looks like it's actually going to be quite good, especially with James McAvoy acting, doing all these different characters. Now, the next one I want to talk about is A Cure for Wellness. Opens on February 17th.
Are you ready, Mr. Lockhart? Then let us begin.
2024, hours to go. I want to be sedated.
You don't get much from this teaser, but it's Gore Verbinski, who cut his teeth doing horror in America with The Ring, which was fantastic. I mean, he's best known for the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, but I think his best stuff has been not those movies, except the first one was pretty good. I like Gore Verbinski, and he's a very visionary director, and you see this with this weird wellness camp that this guy infiltrates, but it's also very creepy, and it has a lot of horror elements to it. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be reviewing the new Rocky Horror Picture Show and Gimme Danger.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll.
There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Keikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the movie reviews. The first one I want to talk about isn't actually in the theaters. It is on TV. It aired last week. And that is the Rocky Horror Picture Show, Let's Do the Time Warp Again. The classic rock musical is reimagined for a modern audience.
Oh, Fred.
Enchanté.
It's just a jump to the left.
Great Scott!
Oh, Rocky!
Okay, first of all, I want to preface this by saying I don't think that Rocky Horror is untouchable. It started out as the Rocky Horror Show, which was a stage production that then moved into a movie, and that's how they got the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I'm fully aware of the evolution of the entire performance. And in some regional theaters, you can find people producing the stage version of the Rocky Horror Show. And I've seen versions of the Rocky Horror Show in live theater. And that's fine. That goes back to the original and it preserves that. And if they do it right, I mean, you can always do interpretations of things. But they remade this movie, and I knew it was going to be bad from the beginning because they're remaking it for a television audience, and it aired like at 8 o'clock. And I'm like, Rocky Horror Picture Show. The original film was notorious back in its day. It was edgy. It was counterculture. It was very daring. It broke so many taboos. I mean, there's scenes in there where it's just taboo after taboo after taboo just falls in the movie. And here they do it as a family-friendly version. It reminded me a lot of the Rocky Horror Glee Show, even to the point that the new cast looks like they came right out of Glee. Riff Raff has frosted tips. Rocky has frosted tips. What is it with all the frosted tips? They look like such D-bags. But the new cast, a lot of them, the guy who plays Rocky, Brad, one of the big casting choices was to cast Laverne Cox, from most well-known from Orange is the New Black, but to cast her as Frankenfurter. And of course, it's already a gender-bending role, and that's totally cool. I am not against casting a woman, casting a transgender, or casting anybody like that in the role, because the role itself is a gender-bending role all from the get-go. You also have to live up to Tim Curry, and Tim Curry was amazing in the original. The Rocky Horror Picture Show would not be Rocky Horror Picture Show without Tim Curry. And I didn't have a real problem with Laverne Cox's performance. She does at times channel him a little bit too much. It almost imitates him in how she delivers the lines. But I had a problem with how she was presented, and I blame this on Kenny Ortega, because she was glamorous in everything. And that's not Frankenfurter. When Frankenfurter first in the original pops open his robe and he's in the fishnets and the corset and all the makeup, you're like, wow. But he's clearly a man in that with the most confidence you'll ever see on screen. And that's what made it such a powerful role. Also, when you look at how Frankenfurter was portrayed in the original, there's a lot of vulnerability there. Not in the original scenes, not in the first ones when he shows up. But as the movie progresses, he gets torn down. And especially in the last production numbers, he gets so torn down. I mean, he's in the pool and his makeup's running. He pulls the makeup down off his face and his feathery headdress is all damp and looks weird. And I mean, The song "I'm Going Home" is a very exposing song to him, and he sort of looks sad and pathetic at times. And that's the real core to Frankenfurter as a character. He wasn't just this brash exterior. There was something in there that Tim Curry so nailed. And it's not that I don't think Laverne Cox couldn't have gone there. It's just she wasn't given the opportunity to. Yes, Tim Curry was involved in this, but he played the narrator. And I know Tim Curry, he's gotten up in there in years, and he's got some medical issues. He had a stroke. It just wasn't the same. I mean, he wanted to be involved because he wanted to be involved, but Tim Curry being involved in this is sort of like Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson being involved in the new Ghostbusters. It's just kind of like they're doing it for show. A lot of it was sanitized, and even some of the scenes. There's a very brazen scene in the original where Frankenfurter seduces Janet, then Brad. And in that one, boy, it's very graphic at times. And nothing, you don't see anything, but it's very graphic what you hear, and it's all in shadow. And in this one, he, like, spanks them, which is weird and kinky. I'm not against that, but, yeah, it's just not edgy. And then even at the end, as they're frolicking in the pool, there's a point where Brad and Rocky almost kiss, and then they move to Toontime on Janet. So they made this movie somewhat weirdly heterosexual, which the movie's not. The original, the concept is to break down those barriers, and this thing just put them up everywhere. I mean, it was like the Disney Channel version of Rocky Horror. But the worst thing, the absolute biggest sin of this, is they put the audience participation into the film. They literally had scenes of an audience yelling at the screen, which just, it's so inauthentic. And anyone who's ever been involved in the full production and sat there in the theater and yelled at the screen and threw toilet paper and rice, it didn't capture that at all. It was the worst part of it. It was like when my dad, when I was a kid, and my dad, who has never been cool in his life, he would say to me, you know, in the 80s, he's like, oh, is that kid at school? Is he a cool dude? And it's the dorkiest way of saying it. And that's exactly what they did to Rocky Horror with this audience participation nonsense that they put in the movie. They would have been better off just putting a shadow cast in front of the film or did it as a simulcast. That would have been cool. Show it on Fox and show it on FX at the same time. You can go on FX and they have the shadow cast. That would have been a neat thing to do, but they didn't. So the new Rocky Horror Picture Show, Let's Do the Time Warp Again, totally sucked.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I really ran over on the time warp. I think the time warped on the show. So let's really quickly go through Gimme Danger. Jim Jarmusch's new documentary examines Iggy Pop and the band The Stooges and their effect on society in the 60s and 70s.
We are in an undisclosed location interrogating Jim Osterberg about The Stooges, the greatest rock and roll band ever.
Iggy and the Stooges reinvented music as we know it.
So messed up. I just started jumping up and down like baboons do before they're going to fight. As soon as I started doing that.
I'm not a huge music documentary guy. I like music. There's music I like, but I don't get into the history of bands. I've never read Circus Magazine or anything like that, where I have read Fangoria. There's the difference. So this is a rockumentary. This is a look back. And we had a lot of these. You had this with Lambert and Stamp last year. You had it with Frank Zappa's movie that came out recently, where they're examining the cultural effect of these older icons of rock who were breaking down barriers back then. And so it's neat to see Iggy Pop reflect on it and in a very open way, unguarded about where his talents lie and really where they didn't. So it's kind of a neat look. I've never really followed the Stooges, so I mean, the Stooges I followed were, you know, the Three Stooges. But these Stooges, I mean, I'm familiar with them and I know who they are, but it's for the fans of the Stooges. But it was a very basic documentary. I mean, Jim Jarmusch didn't exactly cover new ground in how to do a documentary about musicians, but he didn't do a bad job either. So I'm going to have to say Gimme Danger kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Inferno and Certain Women.
We're
Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Man, I really should have put the Rocky Horror review in this segment. I spent so much time on it. That's okay. It was worth talking about. Rocky Horror is so iconic. Here's the thing. This is the problem with remakes, if I may continue a little bit. There are some great remakes out there, and especially horror films. People talk about remakes are terrible, and horror remakes are terrible. And yeah, Psycho sucks. And yeah, a lot of people criticize a remake of stuff like Prom Night and the Nightmare on Elm Street remake was bad, and Rob Zombie's Halloween was an absolute disaster. But there are remakes that are actually really good. The original House of Wax, what most people consider the original House of Wax, is itself a remake of The Mystery of the Wax Museum, a pre-Hays Code movie. But when they remade it in 1953, and it became so iconic because of the 3D, and I mean, that's cool too. John Carpenter's The Thing is a remake of sorts of The Thing from Another World. Philip Kaufman's remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers is brilliant. Now, the other ones, Body Snatchers and The Invasion, those are terrible. But the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers is so good, I never thought they could do better. And then they did the one from 1978, and that's amazing. It's not that you can't remake something, but it's very hard to remake something so iconic. Psycho is a great example of a movie that you really can't remake. I mean, unless you just want to reshoot it, which they kind of did, and that's pointless. If you're going to remake something, you got to bring something new. And if you look at those original great remakes, House of Wax brought something new to the table. The 3D, the Thing is a remake of The Thing from Another World, but they went back to the original source material, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And when they remade that, they went from a small town, which is what it started out as, to a big city in San Francisco. Rocky Horror didn't bring anything new to the table. The new take on it was to just dial it back and give it PG version of the movie that you can show on television, that you can watch with your kids, and it made it awful. That's kind of part of the original, is it was subversive. Let's talk about something that's not subversive at all, and that is Inferno, the next movie I want to review. Tom Hanks and Ron Howard reunite for another Dan Brown mystery, this time with Professor Robert Langdon trying to stop the release of a deadly plague that could wipe out most of the world's population.
3 days ago, a man killed himself. We think it was part of something much bigger.
It's Dante's Inferno.
Oh my God.
Dante's Inferno isn't fiction. It's a prophecy. Someone created a plague.
Our population is spiraling out of control. Inferno is the cure.
They're going to wipe out half the world's population unless we find this virus.
They left a trail.
If this plague is real,
then we only have 48 hours to stop an extinction level event.
To me, this falls basically between, in terms of quality, between The Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons. Now, unlike most people, I actually liked Angels and Demons a lot more than The Da Vinci Code. Oddly enough, I actually read that book. I never read The Da Vinci Code, and I guess part of it is I didn't quite get the character. Now, Robert Langdon's kind of an odd character. From the book, he's very awkward and weird and kind of a nerd. An academic nerd, not a sci-fi nerd like me or a horror nerd like me. So they played a little too close to that with The Da Vinci Code, and then they said, okay, let's give him a better haircut and make him a little more Tom Hanksy. And they did in Angels and Demons, and they do the same thing with Inferno, where they go with the Angels and Demons version of Robert Langdon. Look, if you like the Dan Brown books that have been directed by Ron Howard, you'll probably like this one. It has a lot of the same elements to it. It's got the international locations. It's got the esoteric clues. This one, though, I mean, it hits the ground running with the mystery. It is not something that takes its time. And you see that a lot when you get somewhere in the series, in the third, fourth, fifth film, you don't have to give the background. I mean, if you want the background of Robert Langdon, go watch The Da Vinci Code. And that was only 10 years ago, and they're assuming most people have seen that. It was a big enough film. But as a result of that, it turns a little bit into what Jason Bourne was like this summer, where there's no real development. There's no real character depth to this film. And it has all the elements that you'd expect from a movie like this. But there's a little bit, there's something of substance missing. Now, if you just want that disposable international cat and mouse chase, it's there. It's totally there. And it works. And it's got Felicity Jones in it, too. And I'm a huge fan of Felicity Jones. This is kind of her year. I just like Felicity Jones. And it's nice to see her in the movie. I think she does a fine job. And she balances Tom Hanks. I mean, if you can spend the majority of your screen time providing a foil for Tom Hanks, you got some chops right there. Because Tom Hanks is no pushover. Inferno is fine for what it is. It's not groundbreaking. It's not terribly deep, but it'll make you feel like you're not as smart as you think you are, because it's going to throw a lot of history at you and you'll be like, well, I didn't know that. So ultimately, it's an enjoyable, fun film that's sort of a disposable populist fiction. And there's nothing wrong with that. So I'm going to say Inferno kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Certain Women. I'm not gossiping here. That's the name of the movie. Not people that I knew in my past. I'm going to tell secrets of. Anyway, Certain Women is directed by Kelly Reichardt. And she's best known for very slow, deliberate, very understated movies like Meek's Cut Off and Wendy and Lucy. I'm not a real big fan of Kelly Reichardt. It's just her stuff's not my thing. It's not even that she's dealing with, they're very overtly, very female driven movies. That has nothing to do with it. She's not the kind of director I like. It's just very slow and everything's understated. And this is no different. So I did kind of have to remove myself just from the fact I'm not a huge fan of her work. I hated Wendy and Lucy. I thought Meek's Cutoff was okay, but it really pulls its punches because it does everything so understated. Meek's Cutoff was about pioneers, and it was from the bonnet perspective. She literally shot it with the Academy frame, so it looked like you were watching the movie through a bonnet instead of widescreen, which is most movies and westerns are shot that way. But Certain Women is her new film, and the story follows three separate women facing the struggles of their lives living in the American Northwest.
My mom works in a school cafeteria, my sister in a hospital laundry, so selling shoes is the nicest job a girl from my family's supposed to get.
Let's you and I make an effort to be nice to your mom today.
Why?
Because neither of us do very well without her.
It'd be so lovely to think that if I were a man, people would listen and say, okay. It would be so restful.
As you can tell from that trailer, very subdued, very understated. Now, the three stories they follow, Laura Dern plays a lawyer who is dealing with a client who's not listening to her and is a little bit mentally unstable, played by Jared Harris. And then you have Michelle Williams playing a woman whose marriage is not going too well, and she's having some relationship issues with her husband as they build a new house. And then there's Kristen Stewart playing a lawyer who has a teaching job that she's overworked in, and there's another woman who sort of has a fascination with her. So it has these three stories that intertwine, and they do meet up. They swerve past each other periodically, very, very subtly, like everything else in the movie. I mean, it's well acted. It's nice to see Laura Dern still getting work. I mean, she had a blip of real popularity with Wild at Heart and then Jurassic Park back in the late 80s, early 90s. And she kind of, you don't see her all that often. So it's nice to see her getting a meaty part. And Michelle Williams has been in her other films. And then, of course, you have Kristen Stewart, who does a fine job. I'd like to see Kristen Stewart play something other than a mousy, timid person. But there you go. My only big issue with this is that, and it's even, and I put it in the trailer, Laura Dern makes a point that she says that when she tells this guy stuff, he doesn't listen to her because she's a woman. And I don't know if that's true, because I've never been a big fan of people using whatever their situation is as saying, well, I'm like this, and that's why you don't take me serious, because I'm a woman, because I'm black, because I'm poor, because I'm... I think that sometimes when things happen and things don't go your way, you can blame it on your situation and the perception people have of you. And that's not always accurate. And sometimes it is. And yeah, women certainly do face sexism. And this one takes them on. This takes on several women issues, but it takes them on so subtly you almost don't even see it happening. But ultimately, if you like Kelly Reichardt's stuff and you like that very understated feminist drive of a movie, you'll enjoy it. But I get kind of bored with these movies. But it's still worth seeing for that if you like that sort of thing. But for me, I'm just going to have to say it kind of sucks simply because it was kind of dull and there's not a whole lot of resolution there.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to dive into Halloween with my Fat Guy 5 of my 5 favorite horror movies, the box office, and the home cinema roundup. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to the show. We are wrapping things up for the Big Fat Halloween special. And because we are doing a Big Fat Halloween special this week, we're going to talk about horror movies. Let's talk about some of my favorite ones that I like to watch. This is my Fat Guy 5 for this week. Not necessarily my favorite horror movies, although some of them certainly fall into this category, but my favorite things to watch on Halloween. Because it's different. I mentioned this earlier in the show, Invasion of the Body Snatchers is one of my favorite in horror movies, the 1978 version. That's not a one I watch in Halloween. That doesn't feel like a Halloween movie. These other ones feel like Halloween movies to me. Stuff that I either watch earlier in October or on Halloween day or Halloween night. Here's a little taste of what my first one is.
I am Dracula. I bid you welcome. Listen to them. Children of the night. What music they make.
That's right. It's the late, great Bela Lugosi as Count Dracula. And I mentioned earlier in the show, he was Hungarian. Now, and his accent's Hungarian. He doesn't do a Romanian or Transylvanian accent. So everybody who says the Transylvania accent is really more of a Hungarian accent than anything else, because that's where he's from. But not just Dracula. I'm talking all these Universal Monster movies. I also love The Mummy, and a lot of people remember the sequels, which were more Frankenstein-y than the original Mummy was. But I bought the box set a couple of years ago, and I pull it out every year, and I watch Dracula, Frankenstein, the Wolfman. And then, of course, when they all start coming together with Frankenstein meets the Wolfman and the House of Frankenstein and House of Dracula, some of them get corny, and especially the Mummy movies really have a rate of attrition that goes crazy. And then, of course, if you get into the 50s, they got Creature from the Black Lagoon on there. I don't consider Creature from the Black Lagoon a Halloween movie. Those are in there because they're Universal, but those are very essentially 50s, whereas the 30s and 40s to me were the heyday for the Universal Monster movies. The second one on the list is...
My beautiful creature is destined to be born!
That's right. The original Rocky Horror is a great movie. And I remember in the 80s, I was in high school, and the movie had finally made it into the midnight screenings, the midnight showings, because that didn't take place when it first showed. It was only after it was in the theaters for a little bit and they started doing midnight shows. And in fact, I used to go to the theater, the Graceland Theater in Columbus, Ohio, which at the time was the longest running showcase of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I mean, it's not even a theater anymore. They tore it down decades ago. But the Graceland was famous. It was actually famous for being the theater that showed Rocky Horror that really helped. I mean, yeah, there were ones in New York, but this was in the Midwest, and it had the longest run of Rocky Horror. It actually opened in 1975, and they never closed it. It ended up running, and I remember seeing it in its 15th anniversary in 1990 on Halloween. And then they added the little bit of the extra footage that you get in the last in the ending of the movie, which, you know, seems sort of normal now because that was, what, 26 years ago? But, you know, back then it was new and it was fresh. And I remember the shadow cast. I knew people. And Rocky Horror, to me, is essentially Halloween. And it was a lot of fun and informative in my youth. And I've got it on Blu-ray, so I watch it. The next one in the list is...
Somewhere between science and superstition, there is another world. The world of darkness. Nobody expected it. The one hope. The only hope. The Exorcist.
That's right. The Exorcist. And even though there's nothing inherently that says in this movie that it's a Halloween movie, it actually takes place in Halloween. If you watch the film, once when the Ellen Burstyn's character is walking home, there are kids trick-or-treating in the background. So it does take place in Halloween. People don't think of it immediately as a Halloween movie. They think of it as a horror movie. But it certainly works. And The Exorcist is still one of the scariest movies ever made because it deals with some real fears. Now, the next one on the list is, and I've mentioned this one already this show.
The men of Station 4 have made a monumental discovery. An alien creature had frozen, but not to death. And man...
It isn't Bennix!
...is the warmest place to hide.
That's right. John Carpenter's The Thing. There's an interesting history behind it because when they first made The Thing from Another World, directed by Howard Hawks, it was based on John W. Campbell's Who Goes There, but they just didn't have the ability to do the effects back in the early 50s. So they essentially made it a monster movie, a Frankenstein-type character. James Arness in an early role as the monster, and he was this giant plant-like creature that drank blood. John Carpenter, back in 1982, said, you know what, I'm going to go back to the original story that was never done justice. He takes some liberties because actually in the original story, there's dozens of people at this Antarctic station. They cut it down to like 12 in the movie, and he changes some things around, but it essentially has the same alien, this monster that shapeshifts. To me, one of the greatest movies ever. I watched the Thing from Another World, then I watched John Carpenter's The Thing, and then I also will watch the Thing prequel that came out in 2011, which I don't think is a terrible movie. It's not as good as the others, but it's not terrible. And then finally, the number one thing that I watch on Halloween is...
Halloween Night.
I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
Of course it's Halloween. I will watch this as I'm checking my kids' Halloween candy and taking what I call my parent tax, eating a couple pieces as I go. And it's kind of become a tradition in our house that we just play it in the background. We've all seen it a dozen times, but it's always kind of a nice little tradition because it becomes obsolete once November 1st hits. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Next, let's talk about the box office. Last week, I said that Jack Reacher was going to win. I said somewhere in the 20s. You know, it happens sometimes. Every now and then, I get things wrong. And boo, a Madea Halloween is a triumphant return for Madea, dear God. And it made $28.5 million, which is horrifying, because that means we're going to get more Madea movies. And those are terrible. Jack Reacher came in second with just under $23 million, which actually is not bad compared to the way the other one opened. The movie wasn't all that expensive. It was a $60 million movie, so it's not like it has to recoup hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, this week, I think we're looking for about $30 million for Inferno. Either numbers considerably less than what Angels and Demons or especially the Da Vinci Code did. There was a huge drop between those two. But those came out in May. They were definitely summer movie season material. And there was a kitsch to the Da Vinci Code. It was sort of like the talk about book that everybody reads. That's all gone. And could balance a little bit with nostalgia from 10 years ago, but I think it's still going to struggle. But I think it's going to do well, especially overseas. I mean, it's already going into the weekend with $100 million plus from overseas box office. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into the home cinema roundup. The big one I want to talk about this week, because it's Halloween, it's horror movies, it Lights Out. This came out this summer, and, you know, it's PG-13 horror, and PG-13 horror gets a bad rap. There are some good PG-13 horror movies, just as there were some good PG horror movies from back in the 80s. I mean, Poltergeist was a PG horror movie, and people remember that very fondly. Of course, it did sort of help result in the PG-13 rating because of some of the violence in it. But Lights Out came out this week. It's from Warner Brothers. A neat little movie about a ghost that basically exists in the shadows. And it's intense. It's got some great scares. It's produced by James Wan, and you can see his hand at the very slow-moving element to it. Now, the Blu-ray has an interesting alternative ending. That's the most interesting thing about the Blu-ray. There's not much to it. There's some deleted scenes. But the most interesting thing is this alternative ending that goes way too Hollywood. And it's so crappy compared to sort of the setup of this movie. And I'm so glad they went to this ending that is in the theatrical release, because this is seriously felt like it was written by an executive who didn't know actually how to write. So they made a good decision with this movie. Very creepy, atmospheric movie. Worth checking out and worth a watch on Halloween. Couple other ones. You've got Nerve. That's the one with David Franco and Emma Roberts as people doing an online dare, truth or dare type game. Then there's Hunt for the Wilder People, which stars Sam Neill as a guy and this kid who gets sort of stranded out in the woods, and then there's a manhunt for them because they think he kidnapped him. That is it for this week. I need to go scare some children. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Doctor Strange, Hacksaw Ridge, and Trolls. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.